We humans can be strongly affected by traumatic experiences that happen early in life. And we're not alone. Other mammals, including baboons and hyenas, have shown long-term effects of early trauma. In humans and some other primates, adverse childhood experiences are associated with a lot of health problems in adulthood and even, in some cases, an earlier death. But gorillas seem to be an exception. New long-term research has found that gorillas, which are one of humans' closest living relatives, don't seem to suffer so much from long-term negative outcomes of childhood trauma. In fact, male gorillas that have experienced three or more adverse experiences early in life tend to live longer. We're looking at this new research on gorillas, why they may hold clues to how trauma works in humans. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have a question for our guest about this research, that's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Robin Morrison is an affiliate scientist at the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund and a senior researcher at the University of Zurich, where she studies gorilla behavior and evolutionary biology. Robin, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Can you talk at first about the scope of this research? This is long-term, a large population of gorillas. Tell us a little bit about that, please.
Yes. So this is the population of gorillas that has been monitored since the late 60s. So they were first started being studied by Diane Fossey 55 years ago. And so we're very lucky to then be able to use all of this data that's been collected over the last 55 years about these individual gorillas' lives to understand how what happens to them early on then affects them later on in their lives.
And talk a little bit about the sorts of early events you were looking for, and then, as you say, tracing later in the gorillas' lives.
Yes, so we wanted to look at things that were kind of good parallels for things that can happen in humans and also things that have been studied in other species as well, so other animals. For gorillas, bad things that can really happen to them are things like losing their mother. That's a big one because, you know, she's their most important social contact. She's kind of there fighting their corner in every interaction they go through. So maternal loss is a big one. Also paternal loss. So fathers do a lot if you're a gorilla. They're very caring, and they provide a lot of protection as well. So losing a father can be really bad. Also things like group instability. So if your group breaks apart, if you have a sibling that's very close in age with you that perhaps you have to compete with a lot, or one of the big things in gorillas is actually quite violent interactions between these groups. So some young gorillas experience quite extreme violence at a very early age, perhaps losing one of their siblings through kind of a violent attack from another gorilla. So all of these sorts of things can happen to young gorillas. So they do have a lot of potentially very traumatic events going on in their early lives.
When we look at these gorillas who had these traumatic events early in life, what did you learn about their outcomes, about how they developed later in life?
So we were really quite shocked when we looked at kind of the long-term survival outcomes of these individuals, especially the ones that suffered from a lot of early life trauma. What we found that was that unlike all kind of other species where this has been looked at in detail, in the gorillas, they seemed to be doing quite well. And actually, those that experienced the most traumatic events in early life were somehow surviving the longest. So this was really polar opposite to what we were seeing in other species.
Why? Do we have a sense of why that might be? Why gorillas would be so different?
I mean, I think that's the million-dollar question. So we've got some ideas, but we don't yet know. And really, we're looking at kind of what is different about these gorillas compared to other animals, compared to humans. What's going on that could help them overcome this early life adversity? And there are two things that really stick out to us. One is that in this habitat, these gorillas are living off, they're kind of feeding on all of this vegetation that's all around them. So we like to say that they eat salad and they're living in a salad bowl. Basically everything around them they can eat. And these foods are available year round. There's very little variation and there's not a lot of competition for getting them. So they have access to these kind of readily available foods all year round. So there's very little variation in that. So that's one theory we have. The second theory is all about their kind of social groups. So we know they live in these really supportive, really cohesive social groups. And one thing we've examined is if a young gorilla loses their mother, who's their most important kind of social relationship, what we see is that all the other gorillas in the group really strengthen their bond with that individual, especially the dominant male. And so rather than kind of becoming a social outcast, they become really central in their group and they have a lot of social support from other individuals. So our theories are that it's this availability of food, this reliable availability of food, and also these really kind of cohesive, supportive social groups. So it could be both, it could be either, and we really want to dig into what could be going on.
Talking to Robin Morrison, affiliate scientist at the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund and senior research at the University of Zurich, looking at research on early trauma for gorillas and what it might mean for other species. And Robin, obviously part of the research is to understand gorillas themselves. You said at the beginning, also we're comparing and contrasting with other species, including humans. What kind of either lessons or questions does your research raise for you about other primate species?
I think when we look at what's going on in baboons, so baboons have this crazy, crazy opposite reaction. So in baboons, we see individuals that are living, that are experiencing a lot of adversity and surviving half as long. And when we compare that with gorillas, we see the opposite going on. So one thing that's really different between these two species is where they live. So their habitat is very different. So that is potentially one clue of as to what's going on there when we compare with other primates. I think really the possible lesson from this research for kind of humans and maybe other primates too, is that it might be kind of not just providing resources, but also making sure we're providing social support, and that potentially these two things in combination are really important for helping individuals through early life adversity and kind of buffering them to these long-term effects. But we don't know this yet for sure. And so this is really what we're going to be digging into next to really understand how we can take this and kind of learn what important things there are to learn that apply to potentially humans too.
Now, one interesting difference in humans, and we'll be talking about this with our next guest in a bit, childhood trauma is often linked to risky health behaviors, smoking or heavy drinking. Well, I don't imagine that's an issue for gorillas, for example. But what kind of what do you think this tells us maybe about how trauma might affect gorillas and humans differently?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting idea. I mean, humans obviously have all of these kind of risky health behaviors, things like gambling and smoking, like you said, and gorillas really don't have a parallel, but perhaps there are other behaviors that are risky if you're a gorilla. So maybe kind of your willingness to start fights with other gorilla groups, or perhaps you're gambling on, you know, whether you're going to be able to entice some females from another group into your group. There are kind of aspects of that kind of potentially risky behavior that could be a parallel in gorillas, and something that we should look into in the future to see whether that sort of thing is going on in gorillas. And it's maybe possible that that could actually have benefits in gorillas in ways that it doesn't necessarily in humans.
To what extent do we see big personality differences among a group of gorillas?
I think personality really is a big part of the variety of behaviors. When you see enough gorillas in the wild, you really get to know, you know, some of them are quite shy, some of them are quite timid, some of them are very, very family oriented. And there is a really wide variety of kind of personalities going on in these male gorillas, and also in the females too, and kind of what their preferences are. I think personality does have a big part of kind of the variation in behavior that we see day to day working with these gorillas.
And Robin, as we wrap up, what is your next step, your next big question when it comes to the impact of early trauma for adult gorillas?
So the next things we really want to do are look into kind of how early life trauma influences their social behavior across their lives, whether they're kind of interacting differently with other individuals because of this early life trauma. And then we also want to tie this to kind of what's going on hormonally for them. Are there differences hormonally for the gorillas that had a lot of early life trauma? Are they potentially responding differently to things like stresses in their environment? And could that offer clues as to potentially how gorillas are so resilient to early life adversity whilst other species aren't necessarily?
Robin, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That's Robin Morris, an affiliate scientist at the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund and senior researcher at the University of Zurich, where she studies gorilla behavior and evolutionary biology. She talked to us about her research, finding that gorillas appear to be more resilient to early life trauma than many other primates and other mammals. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Right now, we're picking up the conversation about how traumatic experiences early in life can carry negative repercussions years later in adulthood. Adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs, include things like physical, emotional, or sexual abuse, neglect, living with someone with substance abuse disorder, and having an incarcerated parent. A higher number of adverse childhood experiences is correlated with negative health outcomes, sometimes even earlier death. But our next guest says with the right treatments and interventions, it doesn't have to be that way. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are we talking about you and your life story? What do you want to know about how trauma can affect our brains and bodies? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Dipesh Nafzaria is an associate professor of pediatrics at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health and clinical associate professor of human development and family studies at the UW School of Human Ecology. Dr. Nafzaria, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much. I'm pleased to be here again.
As you listened to Robin Morrison's research, in this case on gorillas, did anything ring a bell or sound familiar with the work you've done on adverse childhood experiences in us humans?
Yes, gosh, there was so much there. And I think it just highlights how much we can all gain from studying other species, including other primates, to learn more about us humans as well. I think the thing that stuck out to me was this hypothesis that perhaps gorillas that had a higher ACE score, that had more of these adverse experiences, were actually developing better social connections, because we see this very clearly in humans, that one of the strongest protective factors that children have against adversity is what we call relational health, the strength of their relationships with others. And that has a deeply protective effect. So if that hypothesis comes to be shown to be likely true, I think it underscores what we're seeing in so many humans.
I listed some of the different examples of adverse childhood experiences. What kind of problems do those early experiences bring about? What kind of problems are they correlated with later in life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's well known that there are a lot of issues that do happen when humans have higher numbers of adverse experiences as children, and how it appears in each person can be very different and very variable depending on them as individuals as well as external factors around them. So it can lead to problems with behavior, mental health, which is obviously tied in with behavior, physical health. Even we see higher rates of chronic disease like heart disease and so on when there's higher ACE scores. And so forth. But I think what's important to recognize is that so many of these things can be mitigated mm-hmm. through what we're now calling PCEs, positive childhood experiences. So we can mitigate these effects in childhood by providing ample, safe, stable, supportive, and nurturing relationships. And even if they happened, the adversity happened, there is treatment that can be done later on, but we need to look for it. We need to identify it, and we need to make sure that adequate treatment is available with a good evidence base for it.
I've seen you give presentations on adverse childhood experiences, and that's, I think, one of the main things I took away is that, you're not doomed to these outcomes of adverse mm-hmm. childhood experiences. How are we doing, though, mm-hmm. at getting these kind of detections and interventions in place to help those kids overcome those adverse childhood experiences?
You know, it continues to be a challenge. I think as a society, we are very much not all that interested in prevention. We are more interested in trying to treat issues afterwards, which is much more costly and takes a lot more resources. So I think that that's pretty consistent for a lot of things, and it's true with adversity as well. We need to recognize that we all end up paying for it, both literally in terms of dollars as well as, the emotional and other lost talent costs to society when we don't get it right. But I do think there's something to trying to balance out the notion of adversity, which I think, we've been talking about so much in the last decade in particular, to also then say, but we should also be focusing on a strengths-based approach. What is there, and how do we protect and promote that, and recognize how powerful those positive experiences are in trying to balance out the adversity, the effects of adversity.
Talking to Wisconsin doctor Dipesh Navsaria about adverse childhood experiences and positive experience for kids, how they balance out, how they affect kids down the road, even into adulthood. Dr. Navsaria, what do we know about how these ACEs, these adverse childhood experiences, can affect a kid's brain and nervous system?
Yeah, the brain of a young child is so fascinating because human beings are born relatively helpless. Our brains are not fully formed. And the reason for that is that if you allow that brain to reach the same level of development that it does in other mammals, the head would be too big, right? You wouldn't be able to be born, and that would not be compatible with the species surviving. So the compromise, so to speak, is to have a relatively helpless baby being born, and then spending certainly the first year and well beyond through the first 5 years of life, where that brain is finishing up a lot of that quote unquote basic wiring that needs to happen. And this represents both an opportunity and a threat. The opportunity is that if we give good, supportive, nurturing environments, that brain wires for language, for learning, for love, and for literacy. And if we don't provide great environments, that brain wires for threats, for scarcity, for safety, for things like that. So the choice is ours as a society. What inputs are we going to provide for those young children?
Now, maybe this is a fine point. I might use adverse childhood experience and the word trauma interchangeably, and I think I'm wrong when I do that, Dr. Nafsaria. Trauma is kind of what follows the event, and we can kind of shape that in some ways. Could you talk about that distinction?
I don't know if there's necessarily a distinction. I think it depends on how people are discussing it. I would say that trauma is adversity, and adversity is trauma. I think the after effects, the post-traumatic situation is certainly different, and that can look different in different individuals over time.
Part of your work, Dr. Nafsaria, is to bring these things to the attention of doctors and other healthcare providers around the state to be aware of these adverse childhood experiences. What kind of things are you doing? What kind of things are you encouraging healthcare providers to do?
What we're really talking about now is assessing early relational health. Again, what's the health of relationships within that family? Because we know that if every child has a deep, deep need to have at least one, we hope more than one, but at least one safe, stable, supportive, nurturing relationship in their life. So, how do we assess that? How do we assess the health of children and families and how they interact with each other and how they support one another? And if we can, and we can do that within just a few minutes as part of regular checkups, and we can either support and protect and promote what they're already doing right, or we can help kind of offer guidance where we maybe see some places where it could use and benefit from some improvement, or to do that repair work if things have already started to go downhill. Because trauma does that, it frays those relationships. So if we can actually offer routes to be able to do all those things, the prevention work as well as the repair work where necessary, we're going to see big payoffs.
Are there things we can do to help the people raising children, parents or other guardians to take care of kids to help prevent these adverse childhood experiences and to have these strong positive connections?
I think the number one thing is that when we work with children and families is, I'm going to throw in a quote from Ted Lasso here, right? Be curious, not judgmental. Be curious about what they're saying about their child. When they make an observation that you find puzzling, right? Like, oh, my child is mean. Really? What? Tell me more about that. What makes you say that, right? Because maybe it's something we can help them reinterpret or get a new vision or new perspective on in different ways. And then being supportive about how difficult parenting is. Parenting is a challenging task, and acknowledging that, and then saying that you believe in their ability to do it, right? A lot of it is bolstering the confidence of parents. I think all parents don't feel confident at some point about the job they're doing as a parent. I know I don't. And my kids are in college, and they would still probably tell you that I get it wrong sometimes. So if we can do that sort of work to help support parents in that role, I think we'll see very big payoffs there in terms of reducing all these things.
It's a good place to leave it, Dr. Nafzaria. Thanks again for joining us today.
You're welcome.
That's Dr. Dipesh Nafzaria, Associate Professor of Pediatrics at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health and Clinical Associate Professor of Human Development and Family Studies at the UW School of Human Ecology. He talked to us about the lifelong impact of adverse childhood experiences and ways to counter that impact. Earlier, we heard from researcher Robin Morrison with the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund looking at her research on early trauma and why gorillas look different from a lot of species with how they respond to that in the long run.